Hey, Sens fans, this is Stuntman Stu, and you're listening to the Sixth Sense Podcast.
Well, if you've just gotten back onto the Senators bandwagon, maybe it's time to reconsider and get the hell off again. With Milan Mihalik done for the rest of the playoffs, the Senators look to be in dire straits after winning their first game against defending Stanley Cup champions, the Pittsburgh Penguins. Graham, what do you think?
I'm not used to getting on and off the bandwagon so quickly with Ottawa.
No?
It usually takes about, five or six games? Winning streak, losing streak, you know?
I never knew Milan Mihalik was so important to this team.
Yeah. Yeah, but that's the news coming out of today's press conference with Brian Murray. That's Milan Mihalik, the second top six Ottawa forward to tear his ACL. And I think he's getting surgery next week, and he's done for the rest of the year.
That makes two.
So what do you think?
ACL tears are in fashion, I guess.
I wonder if his career is over.
Oh, we can't speculate about that. He's only, 15 years the
Did you see Kovalev give some of the media members shit for that?
Yeah, I saw that.
When they asked him?
For merely suggesting it because it was on people's minds and he lashes out. Holy sensitive, Ed. Jeez, did you strike a nerve maybe? Well, I think most people would have asked that question in that situation. It's something you have to ask, right?
It didn't take long for some media members to kind of get all over this Milan Mihalik thing. It's like within 5 minutes of Brian Murray announcing the news.
It's an early storyline, right?
Well, no, that's true. But TSN's Bob McKenzie was all over it saying he had suspected that Mihalik was playing with the pre-existing injury from his time, or I guess when he sustained the injury against Atlanta,
yep,
colliding with the goalpost. So he thinks he was playing with a torn one anyways, and then I guess it deteriorated in last night's game.
Yeah, after seeing that replay last night when they were going on about, how could you not hurt your leg on that play?
And then he casually dropped after that.
Yeah.
He's had three knee surgeries before.
I wonder if
this would be his fourth.
I wonder if his bum knees explain his lousy balance.
And then his last surgery had complications and he almost had to get his leg amputated.
That's right.
It's like, thanks, Bob. Thanks for pouring the salt on our wounds, you asshole.
So what happened then? Yeah, I'll be this guy. We're only one injury away from Jonathan Giroux, am I right?
Oh, I know.
It kills you.
Yeah, it's like the seven steps of Kevin Bacon, but instead of Kevin Bacon, it's Jonathan Chichi. And you
should we pause for a minute so people can consider this? Maybe take a moment to grieve. And
the degrees of separation from Chichi are getting precariously closer.
Yeah, the superstitions and Lucky Rabbit's feet really come out this time of year. Right?
I think there's actually some people in Ottawa who are actually rejoicing in the fact that he could wind up being in the lineup.
Yeah, I know. People think this guy is capable of scoring big playoff goals for whatever reason.
Mm-hmm.
I haven't seen any numbers to prove this, have you?
No.
Kovalev's I've seen.
Kovalev's I have seen,
yep.
But it's definitely not Chichu's. Anyways, judging by the lines today, Alfredson didn't skate. They're giving him a...
Oh, I was just going to make a joke there about them both being in different leagues in terms of scoring, but, they actually are, so I thought I'd pass on it.
Based off today's line combinations at practice, Sean Donovan was in for Alfredson, who's having a maintenance day.
Thank God they explained it so conveniently for us. Do not worry. Don't get
but,
scared.
But Ryan Shannon actually slid in on the fourth line to take Mihalik's roster spot.
Well,
and it looks like Foligno's going to be playing on the second line, like he finished game one.
Yeah, like you said today in the blog, this is a great opportunity for him to increase his value, right?
Foligno, you mean, yeah.
Yeah, heading into this contract. And
who else were they going to put there?
You know what? Forget contracts right now. We need this guy to score some goals. We need everyone to be scoring some goals. That's
he was
all
good,
that
though.
Matters.
I thought he was really good in the playoffs two seasons ago. He was one of the better forwards.
Hey,
him and Brian Lee. A lot has changed since then.
He played fantastic last night. Yeah, Brian Lee, the other healthy scratch.
Yeah. But Foligno had 17 goals last season. Like, if there's one guy in the Senators roster who could step up from the third or fourth line and come up and produce, he's the guy to do it. And I think he was a bit buried on the fourth line.
I think it's important for him at this stage in his career, too, to really prove that he's still growing, that he's still capable of getting better and better and better, and instead of having, a regression year.
Mm-hmm. Well, the parallel that I drew on today's blog was Peter Egan, who's playing on the first line with Spezza and Alfredson now. And, you know, like he was kind of buried playing with guys like Shannon, Winchester. Who else did he play with?
Oh, and
Fisher and Kovalev a little bit.
Yeah.
But, yeah, those guys weren't really gelling towards the end of the year. So he got bumped up to the first line. And now he's killing it. So
probably where he should have been all along, right?
Well, he should be playing with the skill guys. He's a skill player. He's a skilled two-way player, and that's where he should be.
Yep. We've been enjoying that kid all year long.
Singing his praises all year round.
I'm not sure if people are sick of it yet.
Well, but I got a text from you after he scored the first goal, and you said, "There's our boy!"
I only wish he was...
With about 6 exclamation marks, so it's pretty funny.
Yep. You gotta love the effort of Peter Regan, if not for those wicked penalties he took last night, including the phantom dive. And what would you call the other one? Like
inconveniencing Sidney Crosby?
Yeah.
2 minutes for that?
Inconveniencing Sidney Crosby.
That was a bit of a joke penalty. Like Crosby had his arm outstretched around Regan protecting the puck, and Regan draws the call. I don't get it.
Yeah, suddenly all those strange fears.
NHL parody at its finest.
Yeah, people had all these fears about the NHL policing the series too much in Pittsburgh's favor. When you see plays like that, you know, I don't want to suggest anything, but...
But you are suggesting something. I see what you did there.
No, I mean, it's just like when a conspiracy theory maybe gains a little bit of credibility, you know, that kind of thing.
It's got some legs to it.
Yeah.
I don't know. What do you think of the game last night?
I thoroughly enjoyed it. I was nervous as hell the whole way through. I thought they looked, you know, for the amount of shots they had on that in the first, they looked pretty uncomfortable. Eh? They didn't really.
Oh,
look...
The first 10 minutes were terrible.
Yeah, it was like watching a grade 9 dance or something. Just like, man, make your move. Just trust me. Years from now, you'll look back on this and say, "I wish I played harder."
Yeah, no, the first 10 minutes they had some. They looked a little tense. They had some trepidations about moving the puck forward. Not many guys could take a pass, and it was just kind of very sloppy. Lots of dump and chase, no puck possession. And I don't know. Once they got that first goal, it's just the weight of the world came off their shoulders, and they played a little bit better.
It looked like they were, beginning of most playoff series, the first 10 minutes is usually, you know, establishing the physical presence, right? A lot of big hits and stuff.
Feel like the style, yeah.
Yeah, like after like the first few minutes when CBC cut away, they showed, you know, the physical side of the game so far. It was 2 huge checks the Senators both missed, right? Like there hadn't been, you know, solid contact at that point.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that could have maybe, distracted them a little bit. A lot of kids out there playing in their first playoff series, right? I mean, look at Karkner, Carlson, Regan. Hell, even Andy Sutton's only played, 4 games in the playoffs or something?
No, exactly. It's weird, though, because after the first goal, they tightened up a little bit defensively, and they didn't allow a shot for, I think, like 12 minutes in the first period.
Yeah, incredible. And Elliott wasn't really tested at all, which was great, right? I mean, every period we can get away unscathed is just incredible.
How much did that first shot on net scare the crap out of you?
Unbelievable. What a way to start a series,
eh? Oh, man. My head was down. As soon as it dribbled out in front of the crease, my head was down. I couldn't look. And then I saw the replay. Alfredson tied up Stahl. And good God, that scared the crap out of me.
See, I think that one of the most important things about the first period there is when you look at the score sheet and you see, Pittsburgh had, 21 shots for 4 goals. So, you know, approximately every 5 shots or whatever, they're getting a puck in the net. Ottawa had, 26, 5 goals, almost the same thing. So that spread in the first really made the difference for them.
Yeah, no, exactly. That's a good point.
Yeah, to shake him a little bit, right?
You know what shook me a little bit last night?
AC/DC?
Bill Guerin's faux tan.
Oh.
And he had like the raccoon eyes going.
No kidding.
Oh, man. He looked like he belonged on the cast of Jersey Shore or something.
Did you notice an abundance of gold afterwards?
Starts fist pumping after each goal.
Pulls away in his white Mercedes. Or do they drive Cadillacs? I don't even know. Let's talk about the power play.
All right.
That was good.
It was decent heading down the stretch, though.
Yeah. But it was nice to see it in the playoffs.
I mentioned that in the little playoff primer preview that we had up on the website. You know, Ottawa was kind of deprived, goal-starved for the first 6-8 games coming off the Olympic break. And then their power play still managed to finish it around a 19% clip. So, I don't know. It's indicative that they got it going towards the end.
I love the chemistry on power play between Alfie and Carlson and
Spezza.
Those
guys are great.
Those guys are just fantastic together on the power play. And it's always amazing when you look back and you're like, oh, you know, what's going on in the blue line? There's Cullen manning the point. Carlson's down below the hash marks doing whatever.
Yeah.
Paying off for him, too.
I wasn't too impressed with Spezza last night, though.
No, I wasn't either. He looked like he was trying to do a lot on the ice.
He was a turnover machine. He wasn't making the simple play last night. He was trying to force the issue a little bit too much.
What do you think of that that behind-the-back blind pass he made? How brilliant was that? Classic Denny. Like, that was the Jason
Spezza. You've been raving about this for like the last half an hour.
Denny Savard meets Jason Spezza. That's what he
since,
was doing
since
right
I
there.
Picked you up?
Yeah. Oh, it was great. It's good to see Jason's back in old form. As long as he can put up old form numbers, he can do that whenever he wants.
You know what I noticed last night, though, as the game wore on?
What?
Pittsburgh never gives up. You can tell why they're the defending Stanley Cup champions. Even when they get down by like a goal or two, it phases them. That I like. I guess that's one of the pluses of playing against Pittsburgh early on. You know, hopefully Ottawa learns that lesson and they keep going.
Well, I think Ottawa may have given the teachers a real lesson last night. So I think Ottawa, for all their credit too, they kept coming back again and again and again, trying to maintain that lead. They didn't get
they
down
responded
on themselves.
Quickly too with each goal that they scored going late.
Absolutely,
especially late in the late in the second period to put them up two goals heading into the third. There's not too much to complain about from last night's game.
Yeah, like we were talking about it before. You know, who are the real sore spots for the team? And there weren't really many outside the three
some of the
guys.
Best players. I thought like, Spezza, Fisher, even like Volchenkov to a certain extent.
Alfie didn't particularly have a, you know, he wasn't harmful on the ice, but he wasn't Daniel Alfredson last night.
Yeah. Poor Volchenkov, though.
Yeah.
I've seen kids on those ESPN stacking competitions have softer hands than he has. You know, it's going to be a battle. It's going to be a long series. It's tough to overanalyze just one game, but as long as Jonathan Chichi doesn't play, I'm happy.
No kidding. And as long as, you know, I think it's important to really talk about how amazing the bottom six was last night for our team. I mean, it's so often we get caught up in wondering if, you know, our first line and second line guys are going to be able to get the job done on the scoreboard. It's nice that when they do take a night off, and it's going to happen again, too, I'm sure, probably many times.
Well, I think Chris Kelly had, what, like 3 points last night?
Yeah, Chris Kelly had 3 points, led the team. He had as many points as Malkin and Crosby.
I was surprised because after the game, I was looking at, I think it was TSN, and they were doing like the post-game recap kind of thing, and they showed all the line scores and the stats, and I was surprised at Malkin's and Crosby's 3 points apiece.
What about it?
I just thought it was really quiet. Well, obviously, Malkin had the two goals, so he stood out more so than Crosby, but...
Yeah, you're right.
But maybe that's a testament to Ottawa, because Pittsburgh's best players put up the points, and they still managed to win, and Ottawa's best players didn't really do a hell of a lot last night, production-wise.
They absolutely didn't. But I really like the game that all those guys brought. I take back a lot of the things I've said about Jesse Winchester, Chris Neal. Jesse Winchester maybe played his best game in the NHL that I've ever seen.
That might be the best game I've seen Chris Neal play in about 3 or 4 years.
Yeah, a lot of guys had stellar evenings last night. Jarkko Ruutu, I cannot wait to follow him and Crosby and Malkin the whole way. It's going to be an absolute treat.
What do you think of the post-whistle hit on Malkin from Ruutu?
Oh, come on, shirts. Talky happens, right?
I thought Malkin went down rather easily.
Of course, Malkin's going to try and sell that on Ruutu. Think Ruutu's going to buy it? No, the ref didn't buy it. You saw it afterwards, right? There's many reasons for that, right? Like what? There was that slash, taunted the bench a little bit.
Did he taunt the bench?
Yeah, he gave him a little.
Oh, I didn't notice that.
How you doing on the way back to the Pittsburgh bench after they scored?
After the first goal?
Yeah, after the Malkin goal.
Oh, really?
Yep. And yeah, CBC cut away to it.
That's good. His team responded really well to the first goal.
Yeah, no kidding. Really got them fired up. How surprised did Chris Neal look to bury that puck?
Where's that shot been for the past like 3 seasons?
In the words of Don Cherry, he's good, but he's not that good. That puck just got lucky. He was lucky that was rolling.
Oh, same with Ruutu's goal late though, right?
Yeah, off
the game winner. No. The one where he beat LeClaire late.
Oh, through the 5-hole, yeah. Coming down the wing. Yeah. Sorry.
Just seeing eye.
I got confused. That was the Kelly goal that came off the glass. That was the great one.
That was fantastic.
Jeez. Chris Kelly. There's a guy who needs good bounces off the glass to bury those. Volchenkov could have buried that puck, too.
Oh, man.
Yeah. So what did you think of the Penguins last night?
They were, I don't know. There's some stuff. Obviously, like their power play is very effective. Gonchar, Crosby, Malkin. I was surprised actually how much room Ottawa gave them on the back end, because it seemed like they were giving Pittsburgh like an umbrella around the blue line to shoot and have their way with Ottawa, and Ottawa was kind of collapsing down low trying to take away Crosby, but Gonchar and Malkin kind of killed them from the right hand side.
Yep.
And I don't know, I'd like to see a little bit more pressure. Obviously you don't want to leave a guy like Crosby too wide open.
Oh yeah, I was completely unimpressed with the entire back end of Pittsburgh, really. I mean, apart from their offensive prowess that a few of their players have, wasn't really a whole lot to talk about back there. Fleury had a terrible game.
I think I might have given Pittsburgh's defense too much credit.
No kidding.
In the playoff
preview. May want to reconsider that in a hurry. Ottawa made them look stupid a lot of times.
Yeah, like Mark Eden I wasn't impressed with.
Yeah.
For a defensive shutdown guy. Orpik was meh. I don't know. It was just their whole team didn't really stand out. I thought Staal had an okay game. I thought Crosby and Malkin were decent. And I don't know. Everybody else was just kind of nothing special.
Did you see Crosby's face-off percentage last night?
No.
I didn't either. I was curious about it. It looked like he had an extremely successful night at the dot, though.
CBC was trying to drive that point home.
Which?
His face-off percentage.
Oh, I completely missed it.
Mind you, every time Sidney Crosby does something efficiently, like, you know, you can be damn sure that they're going to sing his praises.
If I have to see that dryer one more time. Someone needs to go off the space on that thing, eh?
I wasn't right when I did the write-up for The Citizen, for the prediction panel. I wasn't right on the number of golden goal references. They didn't show the goal. They just showed a stick.
Oh, that's right. Because and all the multiple angles from the photographs from which it was taken
fantastic.
To verify it.
Oh, yeah. Who gives a shit?
Fuck, great.
We got the right stick. That's almost as bad as TSN's fantasy hockey pool. Like, who wants to watch that?
It's someone's 15 minutes of fame, so they could probably just hang it up now because that's it. Your digital picture of Sidney Crosby's stick. Cool, I'll have one when I go to the Hockey Hall of Fame, too.
Oh, man. Ottawa's not getting too much respect, though, eh?
No respect.
Did you see Mendes' Twitter message from yesterday?
Was it David Fields?
It was after the practice, actually. And some Pittsburgh beat writer asked, I forget who the player was, but they asked him, what do you think of Bill Elliott?
So unfair. It's like Brain Lee all over again.
It is like Brain Lee all over again.
Brain and Bill.
Wasn't Billy Elliot was that movie about the little ballerina kid?
Yeah, that was a good movie.
I never watched it.
I watched it.
Sounds like something you'd watch.
Yeah, sure. It was on, you know.
Perfect.
That happens. Wasn't he a tap dancer?
Maybe.
Or is that Simon Birch?
Simon Birch.
I've seen both. One of them. Yeah, I've seen those. That was a good movie, too. On DVD. Okay, something more masculine now. How about mustaches? Are you looking forward to seeing what Chris Campoli can turn out? Is he going to have a Lanny McDonald if we go to the distance?
Are the Senators even doing a competition like that?
Oh, you'd think so. You have to, right? There's not the New York Yankees. You're not going to have to trim your facial hair in the playoffs. What's the best thing about playoffs?
I don't know. Good question.
Best playoff beard of all time?
Ooh.
Ray Bourque?
I'm always reminded of like Dave Lowry from like the Panthers and the Calgary Flames.
I can't picture it for the life of me.
Really?
It's evading me.
Eric Cole always had like the big ginger beards.
Yeah.
Kind of gross.
Commodore was pretty sick too.
Yeah. He's another one.
That was pretty unhealthy looking. I don't think he really conditioned that.
Yeah, I hate Mike Commodore.
Yeah, me too. Sidney Crosby probably had one of the worst ones too. That's pretty embarrassing when you have to rock a teen stash on national television.
I think Chris Campoli's could be absolutely filthy. I think Eric Karlsson can have that. Disgusting.
You know what? End of the day, Sidney Crosby may have
like a filthy maitre d'.
He may have millions, but at least I don't have a teen stash.
Should Rogaine his face. So, Ottawa last night, they drew another bench penalty.
They're good for him.
I know that was a point of concern for you going into the playoffs. I think they drew, what, like 13 during the regular season or something?
Yeah, something like that.
So it's not that surprising to see them draw another one in a big game. But you want to hit on that?
Yeah, sure. I mean, if that was the worst thing that happened to them all game, at least Clouston didn't cost them a goal. Peter Regan took care of those with his penalties. But, well, he did, right? It sucked for him to be in the box, but I don't think he really hurt the team last night. It was fun watching him try and make his matchups all night.
What adjustments would you make, personally, if you were coaching?
Oh, I would roll with the exact same lineup if I could.
Because I know, obviously, with Mahalik out, Foligno gets bumped from the fourth to the second line. Do you think there's a pressure on the coach to roll three lines? Well, more so in Pittsburgh because you don't get last change?
Absolutely. And you know Clouston's going to be wanting to roll just to keep his guys fresh. If they're going to be playing an energy game, which they're going to have to play to beat Pittsburgh, then they're going to have to keep bodies fresh, roll them all, especially in a long grind, if you want any hope in hell of winning.
So you think you roll three, or four, rather?
Oh, yeah, you have to. Absolutely have to.
I don't know if you can do that in Pittsburgh, though.
Yep, I think you're going to have to. You can't go through a series like that with
three
lines.
Mind you, Winchester and Smith actually played reasonably well last night.
They weren't liabilities. They were incredible at cycling the puck down low. I thought I was watching the friggin' Sedins out there. They were incredible. Mm-hmm. They applied so much pressure, and they created chances. Yeah, when you look at it, though, Winchester and Foligno both came out of the night minus one. Doesn't really same way, you know, Malkin and Crosby each had 3 points. They went quietly. You don't really notice the minus one because they played so efficiently and effectively all night and really had Pittsburgh chasing their tails in their own end for a long period of time.
You know, if you told me before the game that Craig Adams would have scored, how does a guy go all season without a goal? And then he busts out a backhander like that.
Paging Bill McCult.
Oh, man.
Yeah, I know. That's unfortunate.
Ellie can get better, though. I think that's a good sign for Ottawa. Like, you know, obviously you're not going to get production from, like, the third and fourth line like they did. More so the third line. Obviously, they're not going to get production from the third line as much as they did last night game. I hope not. Obviously, they're not going to get as much production from the third line. But if they do, we'll take it. Ottawa's big guys have to get better. Elliott has to be better. Alfredson has to be better. Spezza has to be better. And hopefully Nick Foligno produces. We'll be all right.
Conversely, though, I hate to sink anyone's ship, but there's a lot of guys on Pittsburgh right now who have the capacity to get a lot better than those guys you just named in a hurry. And if they do turn it around, they do flick that proverbial switch, then, man, we could be in for it. But we'll enjoy it for right now. All signs don't point to disaster quite yet.
No, that's true. But you know what? Why don't we go to our guest? We're going to have on Brian Metzer after the break. He's an accredited media member, blogger for the Pittsburgh Penguins.
XM Radio,
correspondent. But yeah, it'd be interesting to find out what the vibe is in Pittsburgh. So when we come back, we're going to find out what's going on. All right, listeners, we're back with Brian Metzer. He's the Pittsburgh correspondent for the XM Satellite Radio. He's also a senior Penguins blogger for Hockey Independent, and he's also the author of his own blog, From the Point. Brian, welcome to the Sixth Sense Podcast. How are you doing?
Not too bad. Thanks for having me. I appreciate it.
Hey, thanks for coming on. We appreciate it, too. So, first thing, biggest thing on my mind here, Brian, is what's the vibe like in Pittsburgh right now? What are the newspaper comments saying? What are people saying on the talk shows? Just what's happening in the city?
Well, for the most part, I think that everybody was fairly disappointed with what went down last night in the game. They expected the defending Stanley Cup champions to come out with a much better effort than they did put forth against the Senators, and that vibe has pretty much just been running through the streets here. It's been in all the newspaper stories today. Everyone's pointing out that, you know, Marc-Andre Fleury probably didn't have his best outing and that the Penguins maybe didn't look as prepared for the effort that the Senators brought. So that's been the vibe. I know that there's a number of fans that are still very much behind the team, which is always nice because Pittsburgh, as with a lot of different sports towns, they tend to start to criticize right away after that type of game. But this group of fans in Pittsburgh, a lot of them maybe just having known the success of the past few years, they're still very much behind the team, and especially Marc-Andre Fleury, they're expecting to bounce back in a big way in the next game tomorrow night.
Do you think there's a lot of pressure on Fleury specifically, or is there anyone else in Pittsburgh who's taking some heat right now?
Well, I think he was the main one that everyone's been pointing a finger at because, you know, after, I guess throughout his career, he's been a little bit maligned for being a first overall draft pick. People haven't seen exactly what they've wanted out of him. I mean, it's tough to argue with his credentials. I mean, he's had, you know, plenty of great seasons. He's put up, 30 wins or close to 40 wins in each of the last 3 years. And he's been a proven playoff performer. He's won more playoff series than any other goaltender in the past two seasons. But everybody still looks at him and says, hey, he's not posting Brodeur-esque numbers, and he needs to do a better job of that. And I think a lot of that has haunted him this year because his season wasn't great. He didn't steal points the way he used to. And then you have a performance last night where he maybe had a couple of mental breakdowns coming out to play the one puck that obviously turned into a bad bounce that ended up in the net behind him. And just letting up a couple of suspect goals, especially the Chris Neal one on the short side. A lot of people have been critical of that one today. And those things have, they're putting the heat on the bit, at least as far as media is concerned, because people want to see more out of him just because of the pedigree that he does have. So he probably is the main guy that's under the microscope. One other name that I do want to throw out, and a lot of people are starting to criticize him right now, is Aleksei Ponikarovsky. He was the Penguins' marquee trade acquisition this year, and he really, they've been able to capture lightning in a bottle the past couple of seasons with Marian Hossa 2 years ago, and then last year bringing in Chris Kunitz and Bill Guerin. Those trades all worked out wonderfully. And I'm not saying that Ponikarovsky hasn't worked out per se, but he's not put up the statistics that people would like to see. So right away, he's somebody that they're criticizing at this point as well.
When Tim and I were doing our research for putting together a little playoff preview, one of the things that we noticed is a lot of pundits are throwing around the term flicking the switch in regards to like the Pittsburgh Penguins, because they haven't played that well down the stretch, and Marc-Andre Fleury hasn't played particularly well either. Can this team get it going? How's the mental state of this team right now?
Well, as far as, you know, the locker room, they seem to be very much on board with what needs to happen. I mean, they're not panicking just yet or anything like that. They all understand that they haven't played consistent hockey. That's probably the biggest problem. They've made a ton of mistakes that they typically wouldn't make over the past two seasons. I mean, they've had stretches where they've looked like the best team on earth, and they've had stretches where they've looked like one of the worst. And unfortunately, over the past couple of weeks, those bad stretches and the inconsistent play has really plagued them. And Sidney Crosby, for one, I mean, he's somebody that I think is almost looking a little bit frustrated with the way things are going. And Brooks Orpik's another one. Those two players are big leaders in the locker room and on the ice, and they hate to see their teammates maybe on every shift not giving 100%. And over the past couple of seasons, that's something that we always saw from them was, you know, 100% effort. And I think that with this group, for whatever reason, you're not seeing that shift to shift, and that's what the frustration is. They have full confidence in what they can do when they are clicking on all cylinders and whenever they do have the game plan working the way that it's supposed to. But unfortunately, just with those inconsistencies and the lack of focus and maybe lack of effort at times, maybe everyone's not pulling the same direction, and they're trying to find a way to get everybody pulling back on the same direction and get things back on track.
Oh, absolutely. I agree with you about Sidney Crosby. There were certainly times last night when the camera panned to him on the bench, and he just looked very upset with what was going on. But him and Malkin still managed to produce 3 points apiece last night. Meanwhile, Ottawa's big three guys, I guess the ones who were still healthy, Alfredson, Fisher, and Jason Spezza, put up 3 assists between all three of them. Does it worry you at all that Ottawa's best players weren't necessarily at the height of their game, whereas Pittsburgh's best players were?
Well, I mean, I think what we saw here on this side was that Sidney Crosby, though he picked up three assists, two of them were just those secondary helpers on the power play, so it wasn't necessarily his best effort. I think that Kelly Volchenkov and Phillips did a great job of minimizing his impact last night, so he probably didn't have the game that he wanted to. So on the flip side, that's something that maybe Ottawa wants to be a little concerned about, just knowing that Sidney Crosby maybe hasn't hit his stride. Now, Malkin probably had one of the best games he's had in a few weeks, so that was nice to see. And, you know, one player that I am a little worried about is Daniel Alfredson. I think that once he gets going, he's in that situation right now, and I don't know if you guys agree with this, but, you know, when you have this veteran player who's sort of larger than life for a team, who's, you know, he's an icon in his home country, he's a very well-respected NHLer, been around the block, and, you know, obviously very accomplished, and he hasn't gotten that one thing that's missing from his resume, and that's a Stanley Cup championship. I think when you have those situations and you have those players and you have some young players around them, those young guys tend to, you know, come together to try and reach that pinnacle for that veteran player. And that's what I'm concerned with the Senators right now. I just feel that he's a guy that, you know, they want to push it over the top of him. And maybe it's not the team to get it done right now, just based on the fact that the Senators are using a rookie goaltender and maybe things aren't 100% where you want them to be. But at the same time, something special can happen in those situations, and that's what we're concerned with, or at least I am on the Pittsburgh side, just watching for those guys to come together. And as you said, maybe they're not at the top of their game, or they weren't last night. Moving forward, they very well may flip their own switch and get things going to get Alfredson moving into further rounds in these playoffs.
Yeah, well, by all accounts, Alfredson has stepped up the level of intensity in practices, kind of trying to mentor the kids, I guess, and gear himself up. So hopefully that bodes well for us. I'm not sure how you feel about that, but we can take it each way.
Yeah, well, I mean, you know, it's at the point now. I mean, I'm a Pittsburgh boy through and through. I've grown up here, and I obviously supported the Penguins as much as covered them. But at the same time, I like watching great hockey, and the Senators are always a team that, you know, I've been able to support. Obviously, in a series, whenever it's the home team that I get to spend as much time around covering, I'd like to see them advance because that also means I advance. But at the same time, Ottawa would be an easy team to root for if they were to move on here. And I have to throw it out there, gentlemen. I have an Alexi Yashin jersey from back in the day because I was always a pretty big Sens fan. And I don't know if it's because when expansion happened, I was at an age and it was easy to jump on board with it. But it was always fun to watch them.
Don't feel too bad. I have a dig.
Yeah, I have one too.
But from a Pittsburgh perspective, what do you think of Ottawa's game last night?
I thought that they played great. I wrote something for Versus.com today that just pointed out I thought that they looked at the blueprint that was needed to beat Pittsburgh and executed it to a T, and that was, you know, really frustrating them in the neutral zone. I don't want to call it a trap because I don't think it was a trapping style per se, but what they did was they just attacked Pittsburgh's forwards before they could get into the offensive zone, had them creating turnovers and making bad decisions with the puck and just second-guessing themselves. And once those turnovers were created, they went the other way and produced their own opportunities. And the big difference was they put them all in the net. I mean, they, you know, if you look at the first goal, whenever Jason Spezza comes down and he makes a nice shot on goal, he gets Brooks Orpik turned around off of one of those neutral zone plays. Orpik could not recover, and Regan made a great play to get to the net and knock in the rebound for the goal. And from there, I think that that happened all night. The Penguins probably could have allowed a few more goals because there were a couple saves that Marc-Andre Fleury did make. And then on the flip side, I think that the Penguins had a couple opportunities to slip away. But overall, Ottawa played the game they needed to beat the Penguins. And I think in looking at Crosby's face, as you said, on the bench and seeing that frustration, I think that they really had it going. And you can't say enough about Voracek and Phillips, the job that they do against those big centers, and especially Sidney Crosby. I know that I always enjoy watching that matchup because that's one of my favorite defensive pairings to pay attention to when it comes to matching up against top forwards in the league, just because they're so good at the job that they're required to do out there. They did it perfectly last night.
So last night, we got to see our big, tough Ottawa team in action for the first time, our newly built playoff team. There was a lot of physical expectations from the Ottawa fans, and it, you know, more or less came through, I'd say, last night. But is this the kind of series that the Penguins want to engage the Senators in? Are they more successful under these sorts of circumstances, or are they best to kind of stay away?
Well, I think that they have some muscle in their lineup as well, and they can compete in a physical type of game. It used to be, excuse me, sorry about that, it used to be that they would compete in any style of hockey that the opposition would want to play. They'd be able to play that run-and-gun style and do well enough to succeed and beat teams. They've been able to play the 2-1 nail-biter where you never know what's going to happen. The next goal can win, and then they could play that, you know, beat each other up all night. I mean, as we see so often whenever they meet up with the Philadelphia Flyers. But when they're not playing at their best and maybe making too many mistakes and things like that, I'm not sure that that style of game is going to be perfect for them, just because when they get frustrated, especially a player like Evgeny Malkin, he takes too many penalties in retaliation. And when you have a superstar doing that, it's very easy to frustrate him and get him off the ice, which hurts the Penguins, and I think it's only going to be a benefit to Ottawa. So it almost, it's only one game, but it almost puts you in mind of years ago what the New York Islanders did to the Mario Lemieux, Rick Tocchet and Kevin Stevens-led team in 1993. They were all skill, and they did have some toughness in that lineup, and everyone expected them to just blow through that team. But at the same time, the Islanders frustrated them. They had a guy like Darius Kasparaitis that just knocked around the superstars and got them off their game and taking those stupid penalties that put them off the ice and in the penalty box. And the Islanders did what was needed to win. And I think that is something that could happen with Ottawa in this series. They could get Pittsburgh off of its game plan and taking those penalties and making mistakes. And the next thing you know, they're up 2-0, 3-0, and then the Penguins have their backs pressed firmly against the wall, and it's awfully hard to win 4 games against any team in the National Hockey League, no matter who it is, in a row.
Yep.
Yeah,
true.
No, that's a good point. Obviously, you've been watching Pittsburgh very closely for the last number of years. I know this is the third time Ottawa's played Pittsburgh in the playoffs in the last 4. You watched a team in 2007. You watched a team in 2008. What do you think the difference between Ottawa's 2008 team and their present team? Have you seen any differences that you can pick up on, even if it's like just stuff around the locker room?
Well, I think that, you know, this team doesn't have anything to lose. You know, it seems to me that they just want to come out and they almost have something to prove and just to say, hey, look, you know, people are writing us off. And, you know, coming off of the Stanley Cup championship appearance, or the Stanley Cup appearance a few years back and losing there, everyone expected them to just come right back and make it happen. And they fell in a little tougher times, you know, and went from there, and it just wasn't perfect for them. I think this team has more of the swagger of that Stanley Cup team. And it just that it looks as if the there was a little bit of a rebuild that happened. They have some young players. They made some changes. But now it looks like they are in position to start making the steps forward that probably didn't happen after that last Cup team failed. And that's been refreshing to see, just because you like to see the evolution of these teams in the National Hockey League, because everybody knows that when you are, you know, fighting for championships and rebuilding and things like that, it's a very cyclical process. And it didn't make much sense that right away Ottawa would make that great run and then fall off and fall on some hard times and, you know, get swept by the Penguins after that. And this doesn't seem like a team that's going to be easily swept by anybody. It reminds me a lot of some of the earlier Penguin teams in the Sidney Crosby era, where they're all working together and pulling the same direction. And that's a pretty big thing with any of these teams at this time of year, because when you have a belief in your locker room and you have everybody on the same page, that can go a long way. The only concern that I have for them, I think, because I really think they could make a nice run, is Brian Elliott going to be able to settle down and, you know, win games for you? Because in the playoffs, ultimately it's going to come up where he's going to have to single-handedly steal a game here or there. And you can make a case that he did it last night just based on the fact that, you know, he only had to make, I believe it was 21 saves against the Penguins, but at the same time they missed the net or had 32 other shots blocked. So that could have been a game where he really had to steal it for them, and maybe he wasn't in position to do that based on his save percentage and his goals against. He looked a little shaky at times. But in the future, I really think this team is one that maybe another piece or two can make that run and get back to where they were back when they made their Stanley Cup appearance.
Sorry, I almost hate to bring this up, but Graham, you got me thinking about the past playoff performances between Ottawa and Pittsburgh. And Pittsburgh has played a lot of hockey games, and a lot of the players have played internationally as well. Everyone has been going on saying about how Pittsburgh might be tired and, you know, ripe for an upset because of fatigue. What does someone from Pittsburgh have to say about all this? Can you maybe shed some light on it for us?
Yeah, definitely. And it's funny that you'd ask, because that's one that I speak about on XM pretty often. Those guys are always concerned, talking about looking at it from a national standpoint in across Canada. Everybody says that Penguins have made these two long runs, and they say the same thing about Detroit. You know, are they going to tire out because of those two long runs? And I mean, the answer that I always have is most of the players that make up the core of this team are 22, 23, 24 years old. And I mean, myself, I'm a little older than that these days, but I know when I was that age, I didn't seem to tire that easily. And, I mean, you know, you got the world in your hand. You don't have these opportunities too often. So I'd hate to think that they are getting tired. Now, on the flip side, a guy like Bill Guerin, sure, he looks a little tired at this time of year, especially after that run last year. He doesn't look like the same guy that was on this team last year at this time, and that seems to be hurting them, because when you subtract what he did for them last year from the lineup, it does seem to be a big difference. And there may be a couple of other guys in that lineup that are feeling a little bit of a fatigue factor right now. But for the most part, when you have that much youth, I think that it's tough to make a case for them being that tired. And, you know, Malkin's one guy that I always look at, because the past couple of seasons in the playoffs, he's been the one that always run out of gas. Because the first year when the Penguins lost to Ottawa in five games, they said Malkin didn't show up for that series because he ran out of gas. He had never played that many games in his professional career in Russia or in North America, with it being his first season. Then the following season, he sort of disappeared in the Stanley Cup final. He worked up his stamina to get that far, and we're all waiting to see what's going to happen as far as he's concerned in this run, because with the two cup runs, he sort of ran out of gas and at different levels, and we saw him win a Conn Smythe last year. So it might be the year he regresses and goes back to tired guy.
Yeah, like, that's a good point. That's a very good point.
Yeah, it sounds like a lot of stuff's up in the air right now, considering the future of this series.
Tim and I were doing some research before you came on, and we noticed, I think it was the Sun. It was in the Sun today. Yeah. Andrew Ferentz was quoted as saying, after all the playoff results last night, that he isn't surprised by the number of lower seeds beating the top seeds. And he says in the NHL, there are no such things as upsets anymore. How do you feel about that?
Well, I think that, you know, people are always going to call it an upset if an 8 seed beats a 1 seed or something like that. But in looking at the Penguins-Ottawa series, it's tough to say that it would be an upset if Ottawa would win. Sure, it's the defending Stanley Cup champions, but at the same time, they're, you know, a 4 and a 5 seed, so it's not making that big a difference. I tend to agree with them a little bit, though, that upsets aren't really as big a deal anymore. I mean, sure, it's still going to always be looked at that way just because people see the numbers. And if Washington were to lose in this first round or even the second round, they're going to call it an upset just because of the way they ran through the league this year. But we've watched it happen the past few seasons to the San Jose Sharks as well. So I just think that with the salary cap structure, it's not to the extreme of the National Football League in the United States, but it is starting to make an impact as far as parity is concerned. And when you see the playoff battles and the playoff races coming down to the final couple of days of the season as it did this year, I think that pretty much sums it up for you. There's just a handful of points separating five or six spots in the playoffs, and when that happens, how can you really consider it an upset if the team that finished 3 points behind another ends up beating them in the playoffs? It's not quite an upset, so I would say I agree with him.
All right, so I guess 24 hours now until Game 2. What are your expectations for Game 2, Brian?
Well, I was talking with a number of the other media folks last night, and we're all expecting the Penguins to come out with a much better showing, especially defensively, but we've also seen them play the style of game that they did last night down the stretch in the last few home games at Mellon Arena and things like that, and we always expected them to come back with a stronger performance, and it hasn't always happened. So it's a little bit of a Jekyll and Hyde thing going for them right now, but I do think we're going to see Ottawa come out with the same level of effort that they had last night, try and play that same game that was so successful for them. Brian Elliott will probably be even a little better just because he's gotten rid of those first-game jitters and the butterflies that may have been plaguing him a little bit for his first appearance in the National Hockey League playoffs. And I expect a very well-played hockey game with the Penguins evening it up. I can't speak, gentlemen. I'm sorry. But taking care of business just to make it a 1-1 series and take it back to Ottawa tied at 1.
Before we let you go, one of the things that Tim and I like to do before our guests leave is do like a little quick hit segment where we throw a couple, like a sentence or two out at you, and then you give us the first thing that comes to mind. Do you mind sticking around for it?
Oh, that's no problem at all.
Perfect.
All right, first question. We know you're a big music guy. Who's the best band to come out of Pittsburgh, Pennsylvania?
Wow. Okay. I would say the one that, does it have to be one that you guys would know?
No, not necessarily.
Just because, you know, personally, only because I have some ties to them, and some people I know in Pittsburgh are going to bash me for this, but I'll say the Clark.
Okay.
Last night, Craig Adams scored. How surprised were you?
I checked the horizon for the Horsemen of the Apocalypse.
And now to a guy who scored a bunch of them. What's your favorite Lemieux goal you've ever seen?
In person or ever?
Ever. Television?
I would say the one that's been in the What If Mario Wasn't So Super commercial. That's probably one of the best goals I've ever seen him score.
What's your best memory from the Igloo?
I would say, well, can I give you, I just have to give you one, okay. My best memory would be then I took my dad, who is no longer with us, to watch Marc-Andre Fleury's first game, and that was special just because we hadn't seen many games together since I was a kid, and that was one we sort of reconnected, and I took him, and he was so blown away by the speed of Fleury in his first National Hockey League game.
Well, in hockey, you're always a great mix. What is the first thing you're going to do when you get off the phone?
I will probably get a beverage and prepare for my parents with Jamie Shalley on XM Satellite Radio at 7:25.
What do you have coming up on your blog this week?
I actually have a handful of audio clips from some of the all-time greats that were down at the Mellon Arena for the final game there. We're going to run those in between during off days and things like that just to fill in some gaps. I will also be talking daily about this ongoing series, more of my links and that we do on a daily basis, and probably one of my Just Saying blogs, because I've yet to do one at From the Point, and I really want to get one out there.
Perfect. Well, Brian, thanks for coming on the program. We loved having you on.
Absolutely fantastic.
It was nice to talk to you.
Hey, I appreciate you guys having me, and if this goes long, I'm not sure if you'll have room, but we should hook up again, and I'm available anytime for you, so thanks for having me.
Definitely.
Absolutely.
All right. Thanks, Brian.
Thanks.
Take care.
Welcome back, everybody. Graham just suggested getting a pitcher of Guinness after that one.
Well, it's cheap. You go to Mike's place at Carlton in the second floor of the Uni Center, and it's like $17.
I don't want to come off as some, you know, beer connoisseur or anything.
Well,
but
I understand. Come on, point. You never get a pitcher of Guinness, but like for $17 as opposed to what, like 12 or 13 for like 2 pints?
Yeah, fine.
You get an extra drink and a half for an extra $4.
Yeah, that's then you get the pleasure of watching me pour Guinness.
Yeah, exactly. No, that was a good interview with Brian Metzer.
Oh, absolutely. What a fantastic guy.
And hopefully this series is long, and maybe we'll have a chance to talk to him again. But
didn't pull any punches. Gave the Senators a lot of respect.
Yeah, which is good.
That's
good. It was nice to find out what's going on in Pittsburgh too. And I'm not really surprised by the criticisms of Marc-Andre Fleury. I thought he was exceptionally weak. Anthem at Scotiabank Place instead of the Linden Slouge, and they haven't won since.
Yep.
Fantastic.
Maybe come up with their own curse. Maybe this is the year the Senators lift their Danny Heatley curse or something.
At least Scanlan's was kind of. You know, there's actually like a curse involved where King Clancy said, you know.
Historical precedents as opposed to.
Once I leave town, this team's never going to win another Stanley Cup. Like, you know.
Sure beat the pop singer 2 years ago.
Yeah.
Washed up pop singer. Very washed up. Man, she's been irrelevant for a long time, eh?
For a while now.
Yeah. Going on.
For a while now.
Yep. Long enough to sing the Senators game.
Yeah, she opened up actually, the opening night against Montreal.
Yep.
I wonder how many. 92.
Yeah, I'm wondering how many nacho plates she got for that performance.
That's when she was a really mediocre pop act.
Yeah.
Anyways, we've been doing this for a while now. How about let's go for a drink? Get out of here.
Yep. Enjoy the playoffs.
Enjoy the playoffs. We'll talk to you next week. Stay tuned. Keep reading. Cheers.